Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Rhythms Podcast. This is the podcast that encourages and challenges us to explore how the rhythms that are already humming in our lives can continue to redefine, reinvent, and reinvigorate us in ways that clarify our identity, illuminate our purpose, and sustain our thriving lives. I'm Paul Gaucher, and it is great to have you along today. This is episode 6, and I'm calling this one Creative, as in we thrive as creative people through the discovery of our identity and purpose in the world, exploring our creative impulse, delighting in the wonder of imagination and the power of innovation. But first, some notes from the Sabbath Road. The sabbatical journey is underway. We have arrived in Virginia. So far, a couple weeks of constant granding. We call it granding. And this is the part of the sabbatical that we're spending with our three granddaughters and their family, our family, our daughter, Sarah, her husband, Travis. And the theme for this first month of the sabbatical focuses on stepping into the lives of our family here. Nancy Lee and I are granding. We're granddaughtering. We're grand breakfasting. We're grand exploring. We're grand strolling. We're grand hiking. Grand walking to the bus stop. We're grand reading to a classroom of kindergartners. We're grand cooking. We're grand chocolate chip cookie baking. We're grand napping. We're grand rinsing, repeating, and, well, we're granding. And it is grand. You can keep up with how the days unfold here and there by visiting my website. That's www.paulgaucher.com. And at the bottom, you can find a couple of buttons that will be good for you. The rhythms button, you can just click on that to find out what I'm posting if you want or not. And then there's the podcast down at the bottom of that first page. There's a little label called podcasts, and that's where you can find this and other podcasts. But let's look at this second rhythm. We're exploring the rhythms of creativity. The narrative for this rhythm, I've already given it to you, but let me just remind you, it's we thrive as creative people through the discovery of our identity and purpose in the world, exploring our creative impulse, our generative and creative impulse, delighting in the wonder of imagination and the power of innovation. Just in case you're wondering how this whole thing is laid out, there are 7 rhythms that I'll explore over the next many, many months. Each rhythm has a name. This one is creative. And for 2 weeks, I'm going to explore 6 words. And so we'll be looking at discovery and identity and purpose and imagination and innovation. And that's kind of how the architecture goes. Just so you know, on Sundays, I'm trying to unplug, trying to be technology free. So far, that's sort of working. But I'll admit to you that it's a work area for me. So anyway, so we're into the second rhythm, the rhythm of creativity. And it reminds me of in the fall of 2017, Nancy Lee and I traveled to one of the most beautiful and creative cities in the world. We were in Italy with a group of nearly lifelong friends. We stayed in the small village of Montisi in Tuscany and made day trips to several of the most historic places. If you've been to that part of the world, then you've been where we were, and vice versa. We went to Rome. We visited Siena. We explored Cinque Terre. We went to Venice. Oh, my word, that is a remarkable city. Venice is one of the most interesting cities I've ever been in. Along with that, we visited Assisi, which was probably one of the most spirited experiences I've ever had. And of course, Florence. It was an amazing adventure. As we made our way through the streets of Florence, this ancient, mythically powerful city with our friends, I recounted a story a legend, really, about a little boy who lived in this same beautiful city of Florence, a city known for musicians, poets, painters, stonecutters. And on his way to school each morning, the little boy would wander past the studio of a young up-and-coming artist, a painter and a sculptor whom the world would eventually come to know as Michelangelo di Lodovico Buonarroti Simoni, or simply Michelangelo. On an early spring morning, the little boy paused at the studio doorway and peeked through the half-open entrance into the cluttered workspace. And there, to this little boy's great wonder and curiosity, on the floor in the middle of the room was an enormous block of marble. Fascinated, he slowly pushed the door open and quietly eased himself into the studio. And from his vantage point, he watched the artist walking slowly around the tons of raw stone, touching the edges, the ridges, eyeing the indistinct shapes, making notes and drawing small charcoal images on a tablet of paper. Over the next several weeks, the little boy visited from time to time, wondering what the stone artist was up to as he stood thoughtful and brooding before this hunk of creation. Well, spring came and went. Summer finally arrived, and the little boy was away on holiday with his family. Weeks passed. Months came and went. Finally, one autumn afternoon back in Florence, the little boy was on his way home from school when he walked down a familiar side street and found himself peering once again into the artist's studio. Standing in the doorway of the studio, he could hardly believe his own eyes. There on the floor in the middle of the room, where the once massive block of marble rested without any distinct shape, was a magnificently carved lion. Nearly breathless, the little boy, filled with wonder and awe, burst into the studio, ran to the artist standing nearby, and asked, "How did you know the lion was inside this boulder?" How did you know the lion was inside the boulder? Well, having known that story, that little boy's question came back to me several times as I stood there before Michelangelo's sculptures on that afternoon in Florence. Of course, there were some of his most famous works. The Pietà was stunning. Mary holding the lifeless body of Jesus after the crucifixion. And then, of course, David just took my breath away when we walked into the Galleria dell'Accademia in Florence and came to the great hall where Michelangelo's works were displayed. We looked out over what was the distance of, I'm thinking, was about 50 yards to the far end. And there, at the far end, was the statue of David, magnificent David. David, who at one point began as just a hunk of marble. But one of the most surprising pieces in this whole collection was the work known as the Atlas. And I think this is part of or related to a series of sculptures that Michelangelo carved called The Slaves. But the Atlas is this famously unfinished sculpture of a human figure, the Atlas, struggling to emerge unfinished from the stone that holds him. And as I stood there, having kind of an existential moment with the two questions that sort of fuels this whole project I'm working on, the two questions, who are you and what are you doing here? I thought of that little boy's question for Michelangelo. How did you know the lion was inside the rock? Well, it seems to me that a significant part of the wonder of creativity is just that, knowing what's inside. Certainly, knowing what's inside, whatever it is that's trying to emerge from whatever creative moment we might be having at the moment, What's inside the piano? What's inside the palette of colors? What's inside the word processor? What's inside the grocery bag or the refrigerator or the spreadsheet? But also knowing what's inside of us that's really trying to emerge is deeply significant. Michelangelo certainly must have had a good idea of what was inside that marble before he started, or inside the array of paints and colors, or whatever other collection of materials he had at his disposal to work with. But Michelangelo also knew what was inside of him. Now, it's really up for debate as to whether he actually said this or not, but one legend has it that when asked about his sculpting and how he did it, he supposedly replied something to the effect that the sculpture is already complete within the marble block before I start my work. It is already there. I just have to chisel away the superfluous material. Or another version of that same legend is that he would just chip away at everything that didn't look like what he was creating. So in this case, he chipped away at everything that didn't look like a lion, and then at some point, there it was. Well, I suppose that's fodder for a great discussion in an art class or even a theology or philosophy class, but that raises a few important questions. What is creativity? Where does it come from? What gets in the way of creativity, and how do we nurture it in our lives? First of all, what is it? What is creativity? Is creativity the act of adding something, like paint to a canvas, like music to a staff paper or words to a manuscript? Or is creativity the act of taking something away until the thing being created finally appears, as was the case for Michelangelo? So what is creativity? Well, when we try to define creativity, I found that we often do so by referencing something someone else has done, something someone else has made, something someone else has painted or formed or brought together, something someone else has created. I think there's this hesitancy often to include ourselves as the object of the definition. I suppose rare is the occasion that someone would ask us to define creativity, and we'd respond, well, hey, you know, how about this IKEA bookshelf that I just put together? I mean, why is it so rare that we'd point to ourselves as the object of the creative definition? Sorry, IKEA, it's just something to think about. Why are we so quick to point away from the creativity that is within us? If we've been created to be creative, and I believe we have, and if we bear the image of the Creator, and I believe we do, why wouldn't we point to the Creator's ongoing creative work in us? Most of us have probably had some experience of watching someone else be creative and think, how on earth do they do that? Or maybe we've wondered out loud, where does that come from? Or, I could never do that. I'm just not that creative. Or worse, I don't have a creative bone in my body. I could never create something like that. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but the harsher the statement, the more it's connected to our view of ourselves as creative people. So what is the that we refer to? Our small group was wrestling with this whole question of creativity, trying to define it, when one of our friends shared the experience of having asked this question, the definition of creativity, in another gathering, small group gathering of people. Well, that group of people went back and forth with wrestling with the definition for a while, until one of them suggested this: where something wasn't, is. Where something wasn't, is. That's pretty good, actually. It's at least worth a t-shirt or a bumper sticker. But again, what is that something that people are referring to? That's a good question. Which raises another question: where does creativity come from? Well, you need to know that I'm working on a couple of assumptions. First, I believe that each of us has been created to be creative. We've been created in order to be creative, to become creative. We're created for the purpose of being creative. There's intention in it. There's movement in it. There's a trajectory. The creativity that's been placed within us is going someplace. There's a point and a purpose to the creativity within us. And second, I believe that creativity was breathed into us from the very beginning. It's always been there. It has a source. And I'll say more about that in a moment. But at the beginning of our lives, we had little, if any, trouble expressing that gift of creativity. We sat in our high chairs and made boats and fish with our spaghetti noodles. We made rivers and lakes with the sauce. Once down from the high chair and then outside to play, we imagined new opportunities during rain showers, which turned dirt into a remarkably useful artistic medium that would be mud. And with that mud, we made everything from replicas of our current family members to the buildings that we imagined. We took handfuls of dirt and recreated old family members and even imagined new ones. And with a strange impulse coming from who knows where at that age, we took those lumps of earth and dirt and breathed life into pets and parents, buffaloes and brothers, and snakes and sisters, and fish and friends. And then, continuing to follow that strange but generative impulse, we gave each of them names. And as we looked at those creations that we had made in our image of them, made in the image we had in our little creative minds, we declared out loud, right then and there, it is good. It is very good. And so we joined the creative process, the ongoing generative creative process in the world started so long ago, and that continues into this very moment. When we got a little older and went off to school, we explored shapes and patterns with finger paint, and as many of us moved through elementary and middle schools into high school, many of us, quote-unquote, tried our hands, literally, at creating things with wood and fabrics and metals. And then beyond the classroom, we went on into a young adulthood, and our creativity continued with computers and words and phrases and music and songs, and on and on and on it went. Indeed, where something wasn't, is. But something happened somewhere in between wasn't and is. At some point, someone, a teacher perhaps, handed us a large piece of paper and invited us to draw whatever we wanted to draw. So we drew clouds. And as we sat back and looked at what we'd created, we saw things in those clouds. We saw high chairs and skyscrapers. We saw boats and fish. We saw animals and automobiles. The longer we stared up at those clouds on our canvas, the more we were certain that we were seeing our friends and family members, our brothers and sisters and grandparents. We were seeing fish chasing rabbits and dogs covered with spaghetti noodles. It was a wonderful, mystical, revealing, enlightening, freeing, exhilarating experience. But sometimes that's not what others saw. As people looked over our shoulders, they asked us, "What is that?" and "What are those?" And when we told them what that is and what those are, they couldn't see it. And when what we had made in our image of what we were making, when we had created out of the image we held in our hearts and minds, and they didn't understand and they questioned it, we began to hold back. A little at first, and then quite a bit. And then soon, our generative impulse was less an impulse and more of something that had to be coaxed out of us. When we were 5 years old, most of us were brimming with confidence. We drew intuitively. We knew intuitively that we could draw a shape, paint a picture, sing a song, do some kind of dance. It came naturally, and we were brimming with confidence. But within only just a few years, that would change. The confidence began to wane. Our imaginations, once clear and fertile, became clouded and calloused with self-doubt. And we quietly put down our crayons, and we put our colored pencils away, and we stopped singing out loud, and we decided to just skip the dance. But that shouldn't mean that we'll never dance again. Henry Nouwen was a Dutch Catholic priest, a professor, theologian, and prolific author of nearly 40 books. He once wrote about why people don't write, and he offered this. One of the arguments we often use for not writing is this, quote, "I have nothing original to say. Whatever I might say, someone else has already said it, and better than I will ever be able to," end quote. This, however, is not a good argument for not writing. Each human person is unique and original, and nobody has lived what we have lived. Furthermore, what we have lived not just for ourselves, but for others as well. Writing can be a very creative and invigorating way to make our lives available to ourselves and to others. We have to trust that our stories deserve to be told. We may discover that the better we tell our stories, the better we will want to live them. Well, Henry's quote resonates deeply with me. As someone who lives with words, loves to swim in words and create and make things with words, I resonate deeply with that. One of the demons in me is always telling me that someone else has already said it and that someone else could say it far better than I could. So why should I bother? That's like saying, you know, you can buy an apple pie at the store. Why would you bother making one at home? Well, frankly, there's a lot of joy for some people, maybe a lot of people, to create that apple pie at home. I love to create this. I love to put words together and have this come out. But Henry was writing about the barriers to writing, but what he wrote about writing in particular could just as easily be said of the creative process in general. So I've just tweaked his passage just a little bit, and here's my paraphrase of what Henry Nouwen might say. One of the arguments we often use for not creating something is this: I have nothing original to create. Whatever I might draw, paint, or make, someone else has already drawn it, painted it, made it, said it, and far better than I will ever be able to. This, however, is not a good argument for not being creative. Each human person is unique and original, and nobody has lived what we have lived. Furthermore, what we have lived not just for ourselves, but for others as well. Making something can be a very creative and invigorating way to make our lives available to others and to ourselves. We have to trust that what we have to offer deserves to be shared. Let me say that again. We have to trust that what we have to offer deserves to be shared. We may discover that the better we tell our stories, the better we'll want to believe them. So friends, there comes a time when we just must reclaim our creative impulse. And that begins with acknowledging that we've been created in order to be creative. In the ancient book of Psalms, buried deeply within the Hebrew scriptures, the writer uses the language of the movement of creation to connect us with the source of all created things, to put us back in touch with God who breathed life and creativity into us. In Psalm 139, this is what we find. "Oh yes, you shaped me first inside, then out. You formed me in my mother's womb. I thank you, high God. You are breathtaking. Body and soul, I am marvelously made. I worship in adoration. What a creation. You know me inside and out. You know every bone in my body. You know exactly how I was made, bit by bit, how I was sculpted from nothing into something." Some great words from my good friend Eugene Peterson. So let me take you back to my assumptions about creativity. first, that creativity is breathed into us. In the Hebrew scriptures, in the ancient book of Genesis, in the creation poem, we have infinite words, or I should say we have finite words to describe infinite things, for sure. Finite words to describe infinite things. But what we have from that ancient poem in Genesis is an image of a creator bringing elemental particles of the creation together and holding it all together, holding us all together. Imagine this with me. The creator holding us, cradling us, shaping us, molding us, and then breathing into us, breathing the oxygen of life into us. And once the Creator breathed life and aliveness into us, we became animated by, enthused, and inspired with the breath and creativity of God. So now, with the breath of the Creator in us, we are filled with a creative agency and generative impulse that goes all the way back to the first moments of creation. Take a breath, acknowledge it, acknowledge that it comes from some place, someone, our God who created us, and that becomes a gift. The one who shaped us first inside, then out. The one who formed us in our mother's womb receives our gratitude, receives our exclamation of joy with every inhale and exhalation. It's an exclamation of joy when we say, "We thank you, high God, you're both breath-giving and breath-taking. Body and soul, we are marvelously made. We worship God in adoration. What a creation. Oh God, you know us inside and out. You know every bone in our bodies. You know exactly how we were made bit by bit, how we were sculpted from nothing into something. Where something wasn't is." And all of that raises yet one more question. What do we do with all of this? So I'd like you to do something. I'd like you to take a moment and consider just three things. Consider first the ways in which you already know that you are creative, whether extravagantly or simply doesn't matter. In your mind, acknowledge the ways in which you already know yourself to be creative. Now, acknowledge or think about the ways in which others see you as creative. And then thirdly, the ways in which you would like to see yourself as a creative person. Think about the ways that you are already creative. What seems to get you going? What energizes you? If you had a day to devote to some creative moment, what would that be? What stirs your heart when you think of creative expression? Is it art? Is it music? Is it dance? If music stirs you, you might think about writing a song and write it as if no one else is going to see it or judge it. If you like to write, make a commitment to keeping a journal. And you can keep a journal personal. You can keep it private, just for you. If you like to draw, take a few moments and do this. If you like to draw, just step outside and for a few moments in silence, just look around and notice your surroundings. And then pay attention to this. What are you seeing for the first time? What do you smell? What do you hear? Do you hear traffic? Do you hear the muffled voices of people at a distance? Do you hear birds? Do you hear someone mowing a lawn, someone shoveling a driveway, someone blowing leaves? What do you hear? And if you were guaranteed that no one would have the chance to comment or pass judgment on what you were experiencing, what would you draw to convey what you're hearing, seeing, smelling, and tasting? What would that be? And friends, if you commit to doing this just once a week and then making some notes, Even 52 entries at the end of the year would be truly amazing. You'd be able to look back through that journal or that notebook of these moments where you saw and heard and smelled and felt differently. And then build some accountability into the process. Maybe if you're courageous enough, asking someone to come alongside you and hold you accountable, not to pass judgment, but just to hear you speak out loud your experience. And then maybe once a month, get some coffee with someone else or maybe by yourself and come up with a list of questions to talk through with someone else when you get together. To begin with the acknowledgement that we're already creative puts us in a mindset to be thankful. And when we express gratitude, all kinds of things begin to shake loose. And more about that in a later podcast. But the important thing is to just keep at it. Keep making things. Keep writing. Keep podcasting. Keep practicing. Keep risking. Just keep at it. So back to the little boy and Michelangelo. I think that Michelangelo knew that he just had to keep fighting his way through each day, making notes, thinking, pondering, and then setting to work. And look what happened. Looking through the doorway of the studio, that little boy could hardly believe his eyes. There on the floor, in the middle of the room where the once massive block of marble rested without any distinct shape, was a magnificently carved lion. Nearly breathless, the little boy, filled with awe and wonder, burst into the studio, ran to the artist, Michelangelo, who was standing nearby, and he asked, "How did you know the lion was inside the boulder?" And that leads to this one more question. What's inside of you that's just waiting to emerge? Well, that, my friends, is my story, and I am sticking to it. Thanks for coming along today. You can visit the website, www.paulgaucher.com. Actually, those buttons, we've renamed one, but you can click now on the Rhythms button and keep up with what I might be posting there. Of course, the podcasts are at a link on the bottom. You can subscribe in iTunes if you wish. I want to say thanks to the team of people that helped make this happen. Lisa Gustafson, Darren Hensel, Swen, and Joel Yoda Haugen. You know who you are. Thank you for your help with this. And now, friends, a blessing. And now as you move through this day, may you thrive as a creative person. May you thrive by discovering your identity and purpose in the world. May you thrive by exploring your creative, generative impulse. And may you thrive delighting in the wonder of your imagination. And may you thrive in the power of innovation. Remember the words of Thomas Merton, happiness is not a matter of intensity, but of balance, order, rhythm, and harmony. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll meet you back here soon. Peace.